I don't know, probably about 6 months ago, maybe a little bit more, we started singing a song that we hadn't sung that often in this church. It was written by Horatio Spafford, and a number of the times when we sang it, we recounted the story, the background behind the writing of that particular song. Many of you will remember the story, how Horatio Spafford, very well-to-do Christian businessman in Chicago, life was smooth. But then their family lost a son, and that was pretty hard. Shortly after, there was a massive earthquake in Chicago, followed by a fire, and it took out a large part of his business enterprise. That was hard. Decided that they would take a holiday to Europe, so he arranged passage, but at the last moment he was invited to stay and help with an evangelistic campaign, and so he sent his wife and daughters on ahead. Heard that there had been a disaster at sea, the ship had been lost. Then realised that it was the ship that his family was on, and eventually received a telegram saying, "I am saved, alone." He lost his family, only his wife was still with him. Quickly as possible, he booked passage to go and be with her. And as they were crossing the Atlantic Ocean, one night the captain came down to his cabin and said, "Mr. Spafford, I thought you might like to know that right now we're crossing the place approximately where your family was lost." I wonder if we could put that up on screen for us, please. He went up on deck and stood there and watched the heaving ocean billows coming against him, one after another after another. Eventually went down to his cabin and he penned the words of this song. "When peace like a river tends my way," or by contrast, "when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, you've caused me to know it is well, it is well with my soul." That particular line, "it is well," actually comes from Scripture. And as I was reading the background behind the use of that, I suddenly realized that we need to, somehow or other, get that truth down into the core of our being. You see, we understand the world, we interpret the world at various levels. Years ago, I was involved in marketing. In the marketing world, they have a phrase that says, "Perception is more real than reality." If you think something, even though you might be totally wrong in your thinking, if you think something, then that will become your reality. And so marketing plays on that. You might be very, very comfortable in your home, but they will create a perception that you're uncomfortable in your home. You need to buy something to make your home better. You can have two trays of meat, both of them exactly the same, but one will have some sprigs of parsley on it. Guess what? It creates the perception that that one is fresher, it is better, it will sell far quicker than the other one. Perception. What we think, what we feel, the way we interpret the world, that becomes our reality, that becomes more real than facts. But of course, you and I, we're not like that, are we? We interpret the world through facts. Don't give me the nonsense. Just give to me the facts, and we'll be all right. When we live with our feelings, when we live with perception, we can have a bit of a headache. And the more we think about the bit of a headache, the more it turns into a massive migraine, then it turns into a brain tumour, and then we're arranging hymns for our funeral. Because we're living back in our feelings, in what we think. We go and visit the doctor, and the doctor says, settle down. How much chocolate did you eat the day before? You've got a mild allergy to chocolate. That's all the problem is. Don't get over it. And the facts are different to our feelings. And so we like to live with facts. And we all think that if we had enough facts, all of our decisions would be correct. Well, I want to introduce you to a new thought. Perception is there. Facts might be there, but truth is something else all over again. And when we can get truth into our absolute being, it changes the way we see facts, and it changes the way we interpret those with our perceptions. Can I encourage you? Truth. Pilate asked the question, what is truth? Shame he wasn't with his disciples, with Jesus' disciples, a couple of hours earlier, when Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. He himself is the truth. And when we can interpret what we see as facts through that one simple thing, it changes the way we live. So I'd like to take us for a few minutes. Now, we're working with this one, yes, and probably got a forward button on this somewhere. I have somewhere. Look at this. This is so good. Wow. The truth is, it's working for me. Okay. I was reading this particular story, and I'm reading it quickly as a story because I was just, you know, reading chapter after chapter after chapter. Sometime later, I was drawn to go back to it. And the story is, as you can see from there, 2 Kings chapter 4, verse 8 to 13. So if you want to follow it on the screen, it's got a passage there. Can I sort of give a Jeff version of it? Because we've read it so often that sometimes it just sneaks past us. It's very early in the ministry of Elisha the prophet. Elisha has taken over the mantle from Elijah. And on one occasion, he visits in a village, a town called Shunem. Shunem is a little bit northwest of Nazareth. And while Elisha is visiting there, obviously ministering there, a wealthy woman of the community comes to him and invites him home for lunch, meets her husband, they have a really good time together, and she says to him, look, next time you're in town, don't go to McDonald's. Every time you're coming through here, this is the place where you come for a meal. They've got some nice restaurants in town, but this is where you come. And so, over a period of time, Elisha and Gehazi, his servant, visited in the home. And one day, the lady said to her husband, this is a man of God. He's a wonderful man of God. I believe that we can do even better. Why don't we put on a granny flat? It's only going to cost us about $50,000, maybe $75,000. We can afford it. We can put a granny flat up on the top. And then whenever he comes, he can just go in there, doesn't need to introduce himself, doesn't need to tell us he's coming. He can go in there and make himself right at home. Husband says, what a good idea. We'll put on a granny flat. And that's basically what they did. Built an apartment up on top of their house, and for a period of time, Elisha and Gehazi travelled through Shunem, and every time they did, they knew that they had accommodation and meals would be provided. One day, while they were there, Elisha said to Gehazi, hang on, we are so blessed. We are so blessed with what she has provided for us. Is there something that we might be able to do for her? Why don't you call her, bring her up? And so he called her, and she stood in the doorway, and Elisha said to her, you've blessed us so much. We appreciate it so much. Is there something we can do? We actually have access to the king. Maybe we can put in a good word for the king for you on your behalf. Is there something that we can do? And she basically said, look, you know, we're well known. We're well known among our own people. We're fine. We've been very, very blessed. It's good. And so she departed. Elisha said to Gehazi, that's a shame. I would have really liked him. And Gehazi, Jeff's interpretation, said to Elisha, are you blind? Can't you see? Have a look around. Yeah, what am I supposed to be looking at? Have a look around. Have a look at how many nappies are hanging on the line. See how many toys are out in the yard. See how many children are playing. See how many teenagers they have wandering around the place. How many children are in this home? Every other home that we go to, there's children everywhere. But here, it's a lady and her husband. Oh, do you think that she might like a child? Dumb question. Of course you. Well, why didn't she mention it? Because she has wanted a child so long. They have tried so often. They've been to visit all the gynecologists. They've spent lots and lots of money trying to get some way that they can produce a child, and it's broken her heart so many times that she has given up. She no longer wants to even mention the fact. It's so much pain. Bring her here. And once again, she stands in the doorway, and he says to her, this time next year, this time next year, you're going to nurse your own little boy. Please don't say that. Please don't say that. Please, please, please. So many people have promised me. No, 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 no. Please don't do that to me. It breaks my heart to think that in 12 months' time I won't have a child and my heart will be broken again. 12 months' time, you will have a son. Can you imagine, can you start to think how much joy there was in that home when a few months later she said, I think I'm pregnant. Can you imagine the joy as she carefully watched her baby bump growing? Can you imagine the joy as it came time and she produced a little baby boy, and she snuggled that little boy up against her breast and suckled him? And she cried, I thought this day would never, ever come. Oh, thank you, God. This is the most sweet day of my whole life. Can you imagine how she felt about that little boy? Absolute light of her life. And the years passed. We don't know how many years passed. But at some stage in the future, years had rolled on enough, and the little fella probably about 10 years old. One day he said to his mum, "I'd like to go and visit with Dad out in the field. They're harvesting. Can I go out there and ride on the tractor or the harvester or whatever they did?" Yeah, sure. And so off he went. It gets hotter in summer over that part of the world. Ask Margie. Ask Margie. But as the morning progressed, he suddenly found he had a headache. And as the morning went on further, the headache got worse. It almost sounds like he was suffering from sunstroke. "My head, my head, my head." And so Father arranged for one of the servants to take him back to his mother and took him back to the house. He sat on his mother's knee. At about lunchtime, suddenly his body shook. His eyes rolled up. And he was gone. The light of her life has just been blown out. She takes him upstairs, lays his limp body on the bed of the prophet, and shuts the door. She goes downstairs and she goes out to the field to where her husband is working. And she says to him, "Can I have one of the servants? Can I take one of the donkeys? These days, can I take the car?" "Yeah, sure, why?" "I want to go and visit the prophet at Mount Carmel." "Why do you want to visit the prophet at Mount Carmel? It's not a holy day, it's not a Sabbath, it's no special day. Why would you want to visit the prophet at Mount Carmel?" Note her words. "It is well." You see, she knows that her husband can help with some transportation, but he can't help with the terrific pain that she has inside. He can't help as far as her son is concerned. There's no need to recite to him all the details, because in doing that she's going to reduce her own faith. But she has inside of her, in the depth of her being, a sure knowledge that God is on the throne. And when God is on the throne, I don't care what the circumstances look like, I don't care what the facts are, the truth is, it is well. Did a quick check on the geography, because I was wondering just how far it would be for her to go. Turns out that she gave instructions to the servant, put the pedal to the metal. Don't back off, I don't care. Even if I cry out as you're hooting into some of the corners a bit fast, don't take it. The only time you're to slow down is if I definitely tell you to slow down. Go for your life. It was still going to be a 4-hour trek to where the prophet was. And as they're crossing across the plain of Megiddo, heading to Mount Carmel, where the prophet was hanging out most of the time. As they were heading towards there, the prophet looks out and sees her coming and recognizes her even from a distance, and says to the servant, "Here's the Shunammite woman. He's our hostess. She's coming. Go and check and check if everything is okay." And the servant goes, meets her. "Is your husband well? Is your family well? Are you well? Is your son well?" Question for you: what can the servant do about it? So her answer, from deep within her soul, deep within her spirit, for you, the answer is, "It is well." I don't need to recite all the details. It is well. Hey, church, sometimes we get ourselves so engrossed in telling all the details to everybody we can possibly get, we forget to go to the one person who can help. If we spend as much time reciting to him what is going on that we do to everybody else, but instead when we're reciting to everybody else, we're just diminishing our faith level. "It used to be well, but maybe it's not quite as well as I thought. The doctor said it was far, far worse. It was worse." Actually, bit of a joke on the side. Can I have a joke on the side? I managed to get a dose of I don't know what it was over the last couple of weeks, but I interpret it as being the worst case of man flu anybody has ever seen. Margie's just shaking her head. The doctor said it was the worst case of hypochondria you could ever imagine. He put me on the strongest placebos you could find. Yeah, all right. Sometimes we're so busy in our own mind and reciting it to everybody else, we forget to go to the one that we need to. And when we go to him, we go with a clear understanding, "It is well. While ever he is on the throne, it is well." Of course, you know the end of the story, how she comes and clings onto Elisha's feet, and Gehazi goes to push her away, "Get her away, woman, leave him alone. He's a man of God." And Elisha chastises him and said, leave her be. She's in deep distress. She pours out her heart, "Please, did I ask for a son? Didn't I say to you, I didn't need one because of the heartache that would come? Didn't I say that? But no. And now Elisha realizes what is going on, sends Gehazi on ahead. And Gehazi goes and, of course, comes back, "No, the boy is dead. There's nothing I can do." And Elisha comes and lays himself on the body of the boy. After some time, the body warms up. He gets up and walks backwards and forwards praying. Goes and lays himself down on the body of the boy. And the boy sneezes 7 times. And they take him and give him back to his mother. It is well. Now you're saying to yourself, "Now that's just one off. Why would you build some sort of a doctrine, some sort of a teaching over a one-off like that?" Okay, it's a phrase and there's other ways of expressing the same thought. But can I suggest to you, you make it part of your Christian language. Not that you give it to anybody else, they don't ever need to hear it, but inside of yourself, a sure knowledge, "It is well. It is well." I've known people, every time you greet them, "How are you going?" "I'm well and blessed, I'm well and blessed, I'm well and blessed," like a parrot. Did you hear that bird? Practice it. But the problem comes the next week, you talk to them, "Oh, it's terrible.
My dog was sick on Thursday, I had to take him to the vet. I mean, Grand Tainable, oh, it's awful, I've had a horrible week. Well, where'd well and blessed go? It is well, isn't affected by any of the outside things. It is well, is down inside here. Just a couple of quick examples, because we can, for ourselves, we can choose to be victims or victors, but you can't be both. If your circumstances you allow to control how you think, if you allow the facts to dominate the truth, what's the truth? God's on the throne. If God's on the throne, it is well. When we get that to dominate our life, our living. I think of the example of the young shepherd boy. His father says to him, take some stuff out to your sons, they're out fighting. And when he gets there, he finds two armies lined up on opposing hills in an absolute stalemate. They're in a position where if anybody abandons their hill to try and attack, they lose any slight advantage they had, and the enemy on top of the hill will be able to hurl rocks, stones, arrows, spears, and be able to knock them over, whereas those at the bottom of the hill can't throw anything at them. It's a stalemate. Not only that, but they can't even back away from where they are, because if they back away from the hill, then the enemy will come across and take the high ground behind them. They don't know what they're going to do. But then comes a giant, and he comes out with an ultimatum. Send a man to fight with me. That's all very well when you're nearly 10 foot tall and about as wide as Pastor Jim and myself and three other men put together. It's all very well to have an ultimatum, send somebody to fight, because he knows the probable outcome of it. And the Israeli army are cowering in fear behind their king, who's cowering in fear even worse than the rest of them. And the shepherd boy turns up. And he has an it is well spirit within him. Who is this uncircumcised beast that would defy the armies of the God of heaven? We know the story. He goes out and Goliath curses him by the name of his own personal gods. He didn't realize that that curse was bouncing off heaven and coming back right for him. David announces, I don't come to you sword and spear, but I come to you in the name of the Lord God. You know the story. The rest is history, and Goliath was history. Three boys taken as slaves and been promoted and ended up as governors in the kingdom of Babylon. And the king, promoting them through the ranks, one day announces that he's going to have a huge golden statue, massive thing, and everybody is to come and he's going to unveil it. It's going to be a wonderful day, and the three young men, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, come, and they are told when they get there, we're going to play some rock music and we want all of you to bow down and worship the statue when you hear the music. Anybody who doesn't bow down and worship into the fiery furnace. Of course, they don't bow. Why? Because they're not worried about the fiery furnace. It is well. And when they're brought before the king, they say, King, you need to understand that our God can deliver us. But even if he doesn't deliver us, it is well. We don't bow and worship. thrown into the furnace. And the king declares, looks, we threw in three, there's four there, and one of them looks like the Son of God. Whatever God is on the throne, it is well. In every circumstance we have, whether it's good or bad, God is still on the throne. It is well. And we can confidently affirm that. Paul and Silas, thrown into jail for doing good. And in the middle of the night, they have every right and reason to complain, and to complain bitterly. Can you imagine their complaining if they really got going? What did we do? They've stripped the meat off our backs. What happened to Timothy and Luke? They were there with us. How come we're locked away and whipped, and they got away with it? What's going on? God, don't you care for us anymore? No. Midnight. God's still on the throne. It is well. We're going to worship him in spite of. And as a result, jar's broken open, and it goes on. Hey, can I encourage you? It is well. A couple of months ago, about 6 months ago, I attended a conference down in Sydney, a leadership conference, and the guest speaker was a guy by the name of Phil Camden. He told his story. He was pastoring one of the largest churches in New South Wales, down at Newcastle. And they were just in the process of opening up new centre for worship, and things were going very, very well. But he had a bit of a funny thing going on with his hand every now and then, so he went and saw the doctor what was going on. And the doctor said, I don't like the look of that, I might send you to a specialist. Went and saw the specialist, and the specialist said to him, Phil, this is the first time you'll see me, and this is the last time you'll see me. I'm sorry, but what you have is motor neuron disease. There is no cure for it at all. There is nothing I can do. I can give you the details of what is going to take place. Your body is going to degenerate. The nerves serving the muscles are going to be collapsing one at a time. And within a few months, you'll find yourself having difficulty walking. Sometime after that, you won't be able to walk unless you've got a cane. Sometime after that, you won't be able to walk unless you've got a walker. Sometime after that, you'll be bedridden. Sometime after that, they will have to start feeding you, hand feeding you. Sometime after that, they will be feeding you through a tube. Sometime after that, you will have lost your voice and you won't be able to talk. Sometime after that, the only way you'll be able to communicate with the world is by moving your eyes. And sometime after that, the muscles controlling your breathing will stop working. And that's the end. That is all going to happen. We can tell you that for absolute certain. The only thing we don't know is whether it's going to be 6 months or 2 years, but there is very, very few people that have survived beyond 2 years. That is the facts. I'm sorry, but that is the facts. You want to know the truth? God is still on the throne, and it is well. He went home that night, quite angry, quite bitter. God, I'm serving you. Why are you doing this to me? Had to call his family, and you can imagine the reactions they had from them. The day that I was in Tamworth, he was rejoicing because for one of the talks he was actually able to come up onto the platform using a cane and had to sit down while he was talking. By the afternoon, it was two people helping him to get up to the platform and sit down. It was degenerating and degenerating very, very quick. We heard him on Christian radio, Vision Radio, just the other night. He was doing a conference up in Townsville. You know something? It's deteriorating, just like the specialist said. That's the facts. Do you want to know the truth? God is still on the throne. God is still on the throne, and it is well. Before, he'd never been invited to speak at a conference. Nowadays, he's being invited to speak as many conferences as his body will allow him. He's all over the place. Before, he'd never heard of motor neuron disease. Nowadays, he's joined the club and able to share and minister to people with that horrific disease. Not only sharing, but sharing the love of God, the grace of God. And even in the middle of these horrific diseases, people are coming to love and know the Lord Jesus. Wasn't what he had planned for his life, but God had a better plan. Can I appeal to you? Burn it into your spirit. Let it be a governing, controlling force in our lives. God is still on the throne, and it is well. It is well. Pastor Jim, thank you.